The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you to Richard Palmer for sitting in yesterday on this program and discussing, well, quite a few things we've been discussing this week. In fact, I'll go back over some of them again, really, just so that we can hopefully better appreciate the pace of these prophetic events. If you think about the last two trumpet briefs that we've mailed out, Richard sent one out on, what would it be, Wednesday, and then Joel Hilliker's yesterday. But really, the theme from both of those messages, they talk about just how fast our nations are coming apart at the seams. And so, as I say, I'll be touching on some of the things that we have been talking about this week. Just look at the feverish pace, though, of prophetic events. How much faster could it go? There's a verse in Peter's epistle about doing our part in our prayers and in our support for the work to really hasten along the return of Jesus Christ, to speed up events. But really, could they go any faster than what they're doing right now? I mean, we obviously have a lot to keep up with because of these major prophecies about the United States and Britain in particular. I mean, we saw so many of us live through the last part of that astonishing rise to power. He talks about it in the U.S. and Britain in prophecy. The most amazing fact of all history, he said, is this sudden skyrocketing from virtual obscurity of two nations to the most fabulous wealth and economic power ever possessed by any people. Britain became Great Britain, a gigantic, stupendously wealthy commonwealth of nations. The United States, the greatest nation of history. So as I say, so many of us just caught the very tail end of that greatness, that power, that glory. Great Britain, of course, is no longer great. And look at what's happening to the United States. Mr. Armstrong continued, saying, and yet even more amazing, listen to this, even more amazing and unbelievably shocking than our breathtaking rise to economic powerhouses, he says, even more amazing than this are the facts of the present of how and why we are losing. We are losing all those blessings, all that power, and we're losing it faster than we acquired it. God prophesied of all that we're seeing centuries ago. He said about Ephraim and Manasseh that we would both fall together. As I say, step back and just appreciate the pace of prophetic events. Jesus said that we needed to watch and pray. We don't know the hour of Christ's return, but we certainly can know when it is near. We certainly can be tuned into the signs leading up to that greatest event in the history of the universe. The signs of the times. We can be well aware of the seasons that we're in, spiritually speaking, prophetically speaking. We may not know this specific hour, but just look at the pace in Joel Hilliker's brief from yesterday, this push for transgenderism, and how that it's just exploded over the last few years, just in the past couple of years. And as he asked in the brief, I mean, given what's happened in the last 2 or 3 years with this push, what will the United States look like 10 years from now? What will the United States and Britain look like just 2 or 3 years from now? Joel Hilliker writes here, society is hurtling down this weird delusional road, seemingly without considering just how bizarre and treacherous it might inevitably get. Denying the very existence of male and female necessitates restructuring whole segments of our culture. I mean, that's what is happening right now. It says sex segregation naturally occurs everywhere. The contortions this will put us through over public facilities, sports participation, military service, family composition, the role of science in reproduction, and countless other areas are impossible to foresee. He says not even Karl Marx, with his abolition of the family and advocacy of a community of women in place of marriage, conceived of a completely sexless society. I mean, we're going far beyond some of the perversions of the past, and the pace, as I say, in Richard Palmer's trumpet brief from the day before. This was from Wednesday. Go back and read that if you haven't read it yet as well. But he just talks about what a remarkable week it's been for Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party. We talked about the British elections on the program last Friday. And keep in mind that coming into those elections, Jeremy Corbyn was seen as the extremist. I mean, Theresa May called for the snap elections. She called for that 7-8 weeks ago because of how much of an extremist Jeremy Corbyn is. And yet, look at how well received he now is in the Labour Party. I mean, his own party, prior to last week, his own party didn't even like him. They didn't even like him. Richard says here, on Wednesday, Jeremy Corbyn entered Parliament for the first time since the election. Something happened that he'd never seen before. He was cheered by his own party. Just weeks ago, the Labour Party greeted its far-left leader with hostile silence. Yesterday, it gave him a standing ovation. That's what happened on Wednesday. See, he's riding high now because of the election last week. Stunning results, 40%. 40% here in the UK. They stand behind Jeremy Corbyn. The communist-loving Jeremy Corbyn. The one who loves the terrorists, who wants to befriend the leaders of Hamas and Hezbollah. Richard, in the brief, talks about how that this is a movement that's not just spreading in the UK. It's really this radical leftist movement. It's spreading all over the world. Corbyn's example is empowering the left in America as well, Richard wrote. It says, in a New York Times opinion piece, Bernie Sanders sang Corbyn's praises, writing, "The British elections should be a lesson for the Democratic Party." I mean, Bernie Sanders is still riding a wave of popularity as well. And of course, Corbyn's views are even further to the left of Sanders, if you can believe it. And yet the far left, that's now right in the mainstream. And look at how fast, I mean, it wasn't that long ago. The last election in the UK was, I guess, 2015, I believe. I mean, the Conservatives won quite a few seats. And, of course, the Conservatives themselves, whether here or in the United States, they're getting more and more liberal and leftist as they just follow along with the general trend in society. In any event, I mean, a couple of years ago, it was seen that, well, the Conservatives are gaining a momentum here in the UK. Then you have Donald Trump the year after. And so the liberals are finally being put in their place. The radical leftists are finally being put in their place. But they are fighting. They are going to war. They're not about to give up. What a stunning shift. You see how Corbyn, coming into last week's elections, he was the extremist. And as Richard Palmer brought out in that trumpet brief, then you get through those elections, and now it's the Democratic Union Party in Northern Ireland that's seen as the extremist group. the religious group. And again, this all represents a stunning shift that's happened in just a matter of days. Jeremy Corbyn can now, he can call Hezbollah and Hamas his friends, his dear friends. He can hang out with PLO terrorists. He can firmly believe that the British are the ones who invented racism. But the DUP party, for them to have views, outspoken views about homosexual marriage, that's something that we just simply cannot tolerate. That's where we are today. Again, Joel Hilliker's brief brings it out really well. Richard says this. Listen to this statement. The left's tactics here are dishonest but brilliant. The conservatives say Corbyn is extreme. Labor says the DUP is extreme. And voters are left confused. They come away thinking both sides are as bad as the other. That's the way they come away thinking. Well, they're both extreme. Everybody's wrong. Everybody's an extremist. And it just more sharply divides our nations. We see it happening in the United States as well. The very same thing. I'll get to that in just a second. But to just touch on this this resignation of Tim Farron, he alludes to this in his trumpet brief as well. He was the leader of the Liberal Democratic Party. And he stepped down on, Wednesday, because he can't lead that party any longer because of his Christian views, his Christian beliefs. And I think Richard played the entirety of Tim Farron's resignation statement on the program yesterday. But here's just another snippet from his resignation on Wednesday, clip number two.
To be a political leader, especially of a progressive liberal party in 2017, and to live as a committed Christian, to hold faithfully to the Bible's teaching has felt impossible for me.
He can't do both, he's now admitting. I can't lead this party that I've been a part of since I was 16 years old. I can't be a progressive liberal and a committed Christian at the same time. Or at least I can't lead that party and be a committed Christian at the same time. National Review weighed in on this resignation yesterday. It says, Tim Farron just resigned as leader of the UK's Liberal Democratic Party, and his statement explaining why should enter the history books. This is huge. This should go right into the history books, explaining what happened to our society. It goes on and quotes Farron, that same snippet I just played for you. I can't be the leader and a committed Christian. It's impossible. National Review says, part of the disastrous campaign for the Lib Dems was the fact that its leader was constantly interrogated for his religious beliefs, beliefs that had little to do with his public leadership. Farron had a long record of supporting gay rights and access to abortion. That was his record. Politically, that was his record. But the media, here comes the media. The media wanted to know whether he thought they were sins. The media had to know what he was thinking. Because even if he didn't, if he didn't think it, or rather if he thought it, but didn't carry it out in his political policy, he didn't belong in that office. The thought police. This is like something right out of George Orwell's book, 1984. Farron, it says, would get on television wanting to talk up a second referendum to be held upon the results of Brexit negotiations. His media inquisitors wanted to talk about personal morality. His media inquisitors, they just couldn't stand the fact that he was a Christian. It says, Guardian columnist Raphael Baer explains that Farron's problem was that the culture of contemporary liberalism is avowedly secular. That tells part of the story, National Review writes. The entire elite culture and much of the popular culture is secular in a quite specific way. It is not a secularism that encourages public neutrality while maintaining a generous social pluralism. It's a secularism that demands the humiliation of religion, specifically Christianity. It demands this. And this is what Joel Hilliker was getting across in his brief with this example from Canada, this woman that said, yeah, the authorities at the school demanded that this child befriend so-and-so. I mean, it's not enough for them to just advocate a society where there's freedom to believe what you want. You have to, as I said the other day, I think it was Tuesday's or Wednesday's program, it's not enough just to tolerate it. You've got to celebrate it. You've got to declare it, as Isaiah 3:9 says. You've got to broadcast these sins, and you've got to be enthusiastically behind it. It's a secularism that demands the humiliation of religion, specifically Christianity. And in Britain, National Review says, in Britain it has a decidedly classist flavor, one that holds it impossible for an evangelical like Farron, one of those people, to represent the better sort of person. He can't represent us. He's one of those people. And listen to this. And again, you know there's a ring of truth to this. If Tim Farron wanted his religion to be unreservedly praised in the British media, we all know what he had to do. Convert to Islam and blow up a few teenage girls. 2017 is a year we learned every Farron interview inspires people to kick Christianity, and every terrorist attack starts a wave of public proclamations about the beauty of true Islam. It's an upside-down world. National Review says Farron sought relief from his public trial by recalling the proud history of his faith in the reformation of British politics, but no one wanted to hear it. He called upon the decency and forbearance that are supposed to mark British society. There is none left. There's no decency or forbearance left. He talked about the proud history of his faith in the reformation of British politics. No one wanted to hear about that. And so, what did he conclude? Well, he concluded that to lead the Liberal Democrats and to live as a committed Christian, well, it feels like it's impossible. He also said this. This is clip 3.
We are kidding ourselves if we think we yet live in a tolerant, liberal society.
It's quite a statement. And as National Review brings out, I mean, that should go straight to the history books. You hear all kinds of talk on the left about tolerance and liberal views, a liberal society. But as he brings out, this is the leader of the Liberal Democrats in Britain. We are kidding ourselves if we think that we live in a tolerant, liberal society. That was really the point of Joel Hilliker's trumpet brief, which we mailed out yesterday. He wrote, most alarmingly, such a revolution. He's talking about this push for transgenderism. Just in the last couple of years, and he says, such a revolution cannot take place without force. When a lie becomes orthodoxy, when truth must give way to fantasy, when it becomes expected that everyone enthusiastically endorse pure deceit, you must celebrate it. He writes, such utopianism can only be brought into being with the bullying power of the state. You simply cannot rewrite reality on such a scale without the muscle of authoritarianism. And that's what we're seeing all over the world, particularly in the United States and Britain. We're seeing the muscle of authoritarianism. And it's coming from the radical left. And of course, they're screaming right now, saying that it's coming from the right, saying that it's coming from Donald Trump. Well, no party is perfect. The problem at its core is with man, human nature. But let's be straight about this radical leftist movement, this rise of Marxism in our own nations that have been the champions of freedom and democracy. We see the muscle. They're flexing right now, these authoritarians, Corbyn and Sanders, Barack Obama, the former president, Hillary Clinton and her clan. It's a movement that's gaining in popularity. My father, he writes in the book, Great Again, his latest book, he says, Mr. Armstrong wrote in 1956 about communism perverting our morals, sabotaging our educational system, wrecking our social structure, destroying our spiritual and religious life, weakening our industrial and economic power, demoralizing our armed forces, and finally, after such infiltration, overthrowing our government by force and violence. By force and violence. All this clearly disguised as a harmless political party. The Labor Party, headed up by Corbyn, seen as an extremist more just a little over a week ago. But now it looks like just it's disguised as a harmless political party. The real threat is the DUP. The real threat, they say. And they've got the full support coming from the major media. The real threat is Donald Trump. The real threat are the so-called conservatives. And we've got to go after them. It's important history. You can read about it in America Under Attack and more so in Great Again. The origins of America's dangerous turn left. That makes up a chapter in Great Again, chapter 3. Listen to what my father had to say on one of his Key of David programs. This is the America Under Attack program from April of 2014, clip one.
I want to read you something that Herbert W. Armstrong wrote way back in 1956, which is not exactly what I'm talking about, but it gives you an insight into the kind of warfare that's going on against America. Notice what Mr. Armstrong wrote in 1956, and I'll just quote it to you. A psychological warfare of propaganda, infiltration, subversion, demoralization that is coming upon America, he said. That is the goal of the communist. At least he certainly believed that at the time, and so do I. But they were inflicting that kind of warfare. He continues by saying, it is a warfare that has attacked our minds and moral and spiritual values rather than our bodies and our earthly possessions. He said it's a kind of warfare we don't understand or know how to cope with. It uses every diabolical means to weaken us from within, sapping our strength, perverting our morals, sabotaging our educational system, wrecking our social structure, destroying our spiritual and religious life, weakening our industrial and economic power, demoralizing our armed forces, and finally, after such infiltration, overthrowing our government by force and violence.
That's my father in 2014 quoting from Herbert Armstrong in 1956. 1956. Now, that's also in the Great Again booklet. I quoted from it, a bit of it, just before I played you that clip. We've been talking about this for years. I mean, America Under Attack came out in 2012. And look at the problems America's facing today. Just to focus now on America. I mean, you see what's happening in Britain, even in the last week. But stepping back and looking at the bigger picture, I mean, you think we've been attacked? You think our moral and spiritual values are under attack? Read Joel Hilliker's trumpet brief from yesterday. Are we being weakened from within? Is our strength being sapped? Our morals have been perverted. Our educational system, it's been sabotaged, just as Mr. Armstrong said it would be. in 1956, the radical left, as my father wrote in Great Again, the radical left and its Marxist ideas have gained control of the Democratic Party. And you could say the same about the Labor Party. The Marxist ideas have gained control. And as I covered earlier this week, the young people are right on board with it. All of the young people just being duped. Duped and deceived. But you have to go back to, you go back with what we've said a few years ago. We can take you as far back as 1956, further than that even. It's pretty amazing. Let me play you another one. I think this one's from 1979. This is Mr. Armstrong himself speaking on his World Tomorrow program, clip number 9.
Now, Satan has a kingdom. He's the god of the world, and he's the invisible ruler of the world, and the whole world is under his sway. By God's permission. Satan can't do anything God does not permit, because high above all rule is that of God, and God is permitting certain things for a reason that we learn by experience. All right, Jesus said, if a kingdom be divided against itself, that kingdom cannot stand, and that's a good thing to remember. If the United States gets divided too much between the idea of freedom and the idea of communism, this country could not stand. I'm glad the communists are in the minority.
In listening to his voice, it was earlier than that. That was probably back from the 1960s. And bringing up the same verse we brought up the other day, a kingdom divided against itself cannot stand. And he saw the spread of the communist influence. He saw the spread of Marxism in the 1950s. And he said, if we get too divided between the idea of freedom and the idea of communism, then our country cannot stand. He said then, I'm glad the communists are in the minority. I think if he was here today, he probably wouldn't make that conclusion. Look at the spread of this influence. Consider that quote that my father read in the clip I played previously. Radical left. And it's Marxist ideas. They've gained control of the Democratic Party. My father writes, communists first corrupt, pollute, and agitate from within, but their final phase is a violent overthrow of the government. They aim to destroy the system because they can't build another one until that happens. And then he says, the communist attack from within America is far more significant than you may realize. We are staring it in the face today. We're a divided nation, and we see more and more attacks. We've seen them when they involve racial issues, and now we're seeing them more just over the political division. We're staring it right in the face. Look at all of the anti-Trump protesters. This is going back to last year. That have beaten supporters of Donald Trump. Last August, when they beat that elderly man. And went after then candidate Trump's motorcade. There was an attack last October on the GOP offices in North Carolina. It was firebombed. And then they spray painted it with a swastika, and then the words, Nazi Republicans, leave town or else. You're the Nazis. Donald Trump is the Hitler. He's the new Hitler. You're all traitors. November 2016, the president of Cornell, he was assaulted the night after Trump won the election. The president of Cornell's College Republicans, I should say. He was assaulted. Same month, a group of black men in Chicago attacked a white man while they were carrying on about Trump, cursing him because of Donald Trump. In January, this is right around the inauguration, Antifa spent this is on Inauguration Day, in fact. This Antifa group anti-fascist, they say they are. They're really anti-constitution. They spent the morning of Inauguration Day lighting up trash cans, throwing bottles, rocks at police officers, setting a limousine on fire. That's how they celebrated the transition from Barack Obama to Donald Trump. And they've continued with that, protesting in places like Berkeley in California, and actually preventing conservative speakers from even giving a speech. In March, they went after the conservative Charles Murray in Middlebury College. He had to be scooted out in a hurry because it was turning violent. It says here, this is one news source, some protesters began pulling firearms, temporarily shutting off power to the live stream. When Murray finished his speech, he left the building with Allison Stanger, professor of international politics and economics, and other college officials, and then was confronted by a group of protesters who wore bandanas over their faces. Well, and on it goes. More resistance at pro-Trump rallies in March. Ann Coulter threatened in April. She had an engagement at Berkeley canceled. The university just wouldn't stand up. I mean, the local law enforcement, they won't stand up for these speakers. They won't preserve the peace. They want to give the protesters space to destroy. Just like the mayor of Baltimore said, infamously. Give them space to riot. Give them space to do their thing. Well, and then this week, you have a Bernie Sanders supporter showing up at a baseball field specifically for the purpose of shooting up Republicans. He wanted to kill Republicans because, well, they support Hitler. They're supporters of Hitler. Judy Thomas wrote in the Kansas City Star, this is just the other day, Wednesday shooting in Virginia that appeared to target Republican lawmakers. Well, there's no appearance about it. It was aimed specifically. That's why he asked one of the departing Republicans, those guys out in the field, are they Republicans or Democrats? They're Republicans. Oh, okay, thanks. And then he hurried off to get his rifle. It says here, Wednesday's shooting in Virginia that targeted Republican lawmakers highlights a trend that terrorism experts have been monitoring in recent months. The ramping up of violence committed by the left. By the left. And yet you wouldn't hear anything about this were it not for what happened on Wednesday. That's what it took for the press to momentarily pay attention. Before they get back to the obstruction of justice thing, of course. But for 12, 13 hours, they gave some attention to it, and they've since moved on. This article says Mark Pitcavage, a senior research fellow at the Anti-Defamation League Center on Extremism, described the shooting as left-oriented terrorism. Pitcavage said he had conducted training sessions in Washington, D.C. last weekend for senior law enforcement executives from around the country. In addition to his regular presentations, he said he spoke about the extremist movements that experts had been seeing in the post-Trump election environment. And it quotes him as saying, I warned that we'd seen increased activity from people on the left who are very angry about the Trump administration. There's a real chance for increased violence coming from the left. But little did I know that my prediction would be confirmed so quickly and in such a shocking way. Well, I mean, really. Really, God's servant, Herbert Armstrong, he was preparing us for this over a half century ago. And as my father has said more recently, I mean, how much further do you think we have to go? When you're calling a president of the United States the racist, he's illegitimate, he's a traitor, he's Hitler, or as one left-wing news site said, he needs to be prosecuted and then executed. And then that finally gets pulled down because of there is some outrage left, but not much. Not much. I mean, it's pretty much anything goes. frightening, really. And it's not going to get better. I'm sad to say, it's not going to get better until Christ returns. Now, it's only a matter of time before those on the far right rise up and fight back. Some of them are already doing it. And as some have said, Donald Trump probably could have helped the situation months ago by not coming into office with the kind of rhetoric that he came in with. But even much of that was that, hey, if this is what they bring to protest against us, we're going to fight back. Well, knowing the way human nature is, it's just going to keep, even if we had a little bit of a let's come together moment on Wednesday, and then again at the baseball game between the Democrats and the Republicans last night, it's not going to last. Ann Coulter, in her column from this week responding to the shooting, she wrote a piece, "The Resistance Goes Live Fire." And she talks about what, I mean, decapitating a Trump doll, profanities on live TV, live news programs aimed at the president. Coulter says, "The media are orchestrating a bloodless coup, but they're perfectly content to have their low IQ shock troops pursue a bloody coup." She says, "This week, one of the left's foot soldiers gunned down Republican members of Congress and other staff while they were playing baseball in Virginia." And then she makes a pretty powerful point here, just pointing out the hypocrisy. "Remember when it was frightening for the losing party not to accept the results of an election? During the third debate, Trump refused to preemptively agree to the election results, saying he'd look at it at the time. And the media responded." She gives all these responses from the media. "This is a horrifying repudiation of democracy. For Trump to say 3 weeks before the election, well, I'm not sure if I'll accept the results. This is dangerous," the media told us. "This is dangerous." And of course, at that time, they thought, surely Hillary Clinton will win. And they've got to go after Trump because he's an extremist. She says, "Recently, Hillary Clinton announced her steadfast opposition to the winning candidate using a military term, saying she'd join the resistance." Hillary Clinton has joined the resistance. Bernie Sanders, he's part of the resistance. Ann Coulter says here, "Imagine if Trump lost and then announced that he'd joined the resistance. He'd be accused of trying to activate right-wing militias. Every dyspeptic glance at an immigrant would be reported as fascistic violence." But the media seem blithely unaware that the anti-Trump resistance has been accompanied by nonstop militaristic violence from liberals. It's nonstop. It just doesn't get the attention because the media doesn't really care to report on it unless there's a case like there was in Berkeley once where the right fights back physically. And then you've got a mini civil war, and so that gets some reportage, but not like it should. They're throwing fuel on a raging fire. It says further on, the fake news insists that Trump's White House is in chaos, and Ann Coulter says, no, the country is in chaos. She's right on there. She's right on there. Leave aside Trump's White House for a moment and look at what's happening to the country, to the United States. Look at what's happening to Great Britain. All that we're going to get is name calling. All that we're going to get is, well, your side does it too. All that we're going to get is an escalation. And it's because there's a spiritual component behind all of this. That's the one thing that's left out of all the coverage, even coming from the conservative side. They don't see the spirit behind this. They don't see, not even on the more conservative, even religious side. It doesn't even factor into politics. It can't. As the case with Mr. Farron proves just this week, it cannot coexist with politics. We cannot look to God for guidance and direction. We cannot look to God for a solution. In fact, if you personally have a close relationship with God, or you espouse that you do, you don't belong anywhere near the political arena. That's the thinking. It's leading to a much, much bigger explosion than what we saw on Wednesday. When we come back, I'll spend a little bit more time on that spiritual component. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Trump has got to get on the TV and tell his supporters that violence in the political process in America is not acceptable. End of discussion.
One second, Ronald. I'm sorry. I just want to play devil's advocate for 1 second on this. Some of your supporters in Chicago were acting violently as well. And I have to say, the guy who rushed the stage yesterday at Donald Trump voted for you. Now, I know you're not encouraging the violence, but
Jake,
you need to tell your supporters.
Millions of people voted for me. If I have to take responsibility for everybody who voted for me, it will be a very difficult life.
That's Bernie Sanders a little over a year ago during the campaign season, March 2016. Saying that Donald Trump needed to take responsibility for his supporters, those that were out there with any kind of violent action or rhetoric. But he doesn't have to take responsibility for his millions of supporters. And as that commentator brought out, Jake Tapper, and he did it in the nicest of ways. Look, I know you're not encouraging them. I know that your rhetoric is not to be blamed here. But what do you say to those who say that, well, it's Bernie Sanders people that are showing up to protest? It's a Bernie Sanders supporter that rushes the stage where Donald Trump is speaking. And now added to that, a Bernie Sanders supporter who picks up a rifle and goes looking for Republicans. Is there a solution in man? When inevitably, when these disasters happen, there might be a moment where the two can say that, well, the act, we denounce the act. And that's what Bernie Sanders, as I got from the statement he made the other day, he denounced the action that crazed lunatic took, but he didn't do what he suggested Donald Trump do to his supporters. He didn't say that, hey, listen, I'm speaking to all of you who support me. In no way, shape, or form am I or have I ever said anything to suggest that violence is acceptable. That's one example. And here's Nancy Pelosi. She reacted strongly when a reporter said, look, there's some conservatives that are saying the rhetoric, the angry rhetoric, the calls for violence coming from Democrats, that's contributed to this climate. Here's how that exchange went down. This is clip five.
Could you just comment on the possibility that this incident could be used against Democrats or the Democratic Party politically because the assailant was apparently motivated by some kind of anti-Republican sentiment? And we have heard comments from Republicans, including Congress, about vitriolic rhetoric from the left being in some way to blame.
Well, I think that your question is an excellent one. And I think that the comments made by my Republican colleagues are outrageous, beneath the dignity of the job that they hold, beneath the dignity of the respect that we would like Congress to command. How dare they say such a thing? How dare they?
How dare they criticize us? See, what about them? And then the other side steps up and says, well, what about them? Look at them. But going back to this movement worldwide, all through the United States, Great Britain, Australia, the rise of the radical left. It's dangerous because at its core, as my father brings out and as Mr. Armstrong was talking about in so many of those articles and so many of those clips from the 1950s, at its core, this radical leftist Marxist movement, its intent is to bring down the system because it has to destroy the present system before it can build up its new one, its new utopia. A lot of death and destruction's coming. You can feel the clash, can't you? You can feel it building. My father in, well, a number of his Key of David programs, he's talked about the root cause of this problem and the spirit behind it all. First, as to root causes, this is from his Key of David program, March 2014, clip number six.
Isaiah says in verse 4 of chapter 1 that we have forsaken the Lord. We've gone away backward. Everything is backward and upside down. And oh, the destruction it's bringing upon this land. You see, it's not some radical group's fault. They're just leading the way. The radicals and those who are lawless, they're just leading the way. But the fault is in the American people. They're not living according to God's way of life. They've forsaken Him. They're turning away backward and getting rid of the values that make any nation strong and destroy any nation that continues to practice such lawlessness. You see, it's only God that can save America or any other nation. That's what we have to understand.
That's my father from right at the tail end of his program, March 27th, 2014. His program, America Under Attack, the program in which he offered that booklet. The root cause, the fault is with the people. And Isaiah 1, as he alluded to there, I mean, Isaiah 1 speaks of that sickness from head to toe. It speaks of that sickness through and through. Go back, as I say, and read Joel Hilliker's trumpet brief from yesterday. I mean, what's it going to be like in 2 or 3 years from now? If this is the current political climate, if this is if this is where we are with transgenderism, the year of the transgender political candidate. That was a headline from the other day. I talked to you about the one running for office in one of the southeastern states. I forget which. But if this is where we are today, what will it be like in 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now? Satan's been cast down. He's been cast down. He's confined to this earth. And you see his fingerprints on everything. You really do. Here's another snippet from a program my father gave in December of 2012. This is on the subject of Satan being cast down, that prophecy in Revelation 12. This is clip 7.
Today we see on television and hear on radio racist remarks just frequently. Now, if you stop and think about that, I mean, they're just flying all over the place. What is just the natural outcome of that? If you're going to use a little psychology here, well, the natural outcome of it is race riots and race wars. I wonder if we know what is really happening in our country and in other countries, but especially the U.S., what is really happening? Is that because Satan has been cast down? Do you think it might have anything to do with that? Well, I think if it's already happened, we'd be naive not to think that. And I'm going to show you that it has already happened. It has already happened, and anybody can prove it. But look, when you start talking about people like that, and you don't have any proof, which most of them don't, they just spout out the words, well, then you're filling your country with hatred and division that leads to, well, civil war and violence galore. Do we understand what is happening on this earth, and do we know why it's that way? Well, I'll tell you, a major part of it is because Satan has been cast down now. And he's full of wrath because he knows he has but a short time. He isn't going to be able to operate very long. So he's just as enraged as he could possibly be, or more so than he ever has been.
He knows that he's about out of time. That's my father with the program Satan Cast Down from December 2012. Asking if we really understand what's happening in our nations. And just thinking it through. Where does this end? Where does this end when you're filling the nation with violence and crime and hatred and division? It leads to civil war, as he said. He was talking about that back in 2012, 5 years ago. Victor Davis Hanson wrote a piece the other day, Can a Divided America Survive? I think Richard Palmer read part of this to you yesterday. Can a divided America, can a divided Britain survive? Hanson says history's not very kind to multicultural chaos as opposed to a multiracial society united by a single national culture. The fates of Rwanda, Iraq, and the former Yugoslavia should remind us of our present disastrous trajectory. I mean, look at the trajectory we're on. It says either the United States will return to a shared single language and allegiance to a common and singular culture, or it will eventually descend into clannish violence. He says in his conclusion, America barely survived the Civil War. The Great Depression of the 1930s, 1929 to 39, and the rioting and protests of the 1960s. I mean, we've had our sharp divisions in the past, and you could say we barely survived them, but today's growing divides are additionally supercharged by instant internet and social media communications, 24/7 cable news, partisan media, and the denigration of America's past traditions. Richard brought this out to you yesterday. I mean, you saw what was happening on Twitter as soon as the shooting took place. He deserved it. He's a right winger. He hangs out with the wrong people. I hope that he dies. Hanson says here, all Americans need to take a deep breath, step back, and rein in their anger, and find more ways to connect rather than divide themselves. They should assume their opponents are not all sinners and that their supporters are not all saints. Things are bad now, but our own history suggests that if we are not careful, they can get even worse. So we've got our own history. We've got prophecy. I've brought that out to you here. Satan's been cast down, Revelation 12. Read Isaiah 1. Read about the sickness. Read about the upside-down society in Isaiah 3. But then, too, look at our own history from the 1860s, from the 1930s, from the 1960s. Things are bad now. But they're going to get much, much worse. And it all has to do with this evil spirit being, our deadly adversary, who's been cast down. My father says, those who fail to see the devil behind what is happening in America, and we could add Britain as well, those who fail to see the devil behind it will end up being one of his victims. Well, look further at Great Again, also America Under Attack. Those prophecies I've referenced on today's program, hopefully we'll be able to compile more for you in the weeks ahead, because as I say, I mean, you see a sharply divided America, and it is, just as Jesus said, a divided nation or a divided kingdom can't stand, and so we've got to keep a close watch on what's happening in the United States and Britain. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as we put the finishing touches on another program here Friday. Hope you have a wonderful weekend. Send us an email if you like, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next week.